Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the quarterly IAN conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Adele Barr. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Shannon, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today on what looks like to be quite a winter day already for us here in the Northeast. A little bit of snow, raining, freezing rain. I'm here today, and I'm joined, of course, with all our leaders here. But I'm starting the call today because we're going to talk a little bit about the platform that you logged into. Previously, we were using a different one, and now we've switched over to ReadyTalk, the same company that you dial into, and now we're using the same for the visual part. So what I like to do is just draw your attention to a few things, and it won't take up too much time. As I mentioned, ReadyTalk provides quite a few options, and one of them is to bring this presentation into full screen. And if you press the button here on the right-hand side, by pressing that button, it'll go into full screen mode. Then by pressing the button again, you will leave that full screen mode. Just be sure not to press that exit conference button directly to the right of the full screen button. Of course, then you'll leave and we'll have to log back in. And I did want to note that prior to entering this room, you actually had to put in some information. You had to put in your first name, last name, your organization. Also, you entered your email address. There was a section at the bottom, I don't know if you noticed, to remember me or remember this information on this computer. So I know how we always like to have little shortcuts. That's a convenient opportunity for you as long as that's you using that same computer. Okay, let's look at the next slide. Aha, we have a raise hand button. Of course, I'm bringing it to your attention so that you can disregard it because for these calls, we don't use this feature. So what you can do instead, of course, when you're ready to ask a question, you'll want to press star 1 on your phone during the Q&A segments of the call. And, of course, you can certainly ask those questions directly in the chat at any time during the call, and we usually read those during the Q&A session. If you accidentally press this button, you can press it again to lower your hand, or TPM will go ahead and lower the participant's hands manually throughout the call. Next slide, please. Navigating to the chat screen so that we all can actually get to chatting. ReadyTalk actually hides the chat by default in order to display the presentation slides at a larger size. So what you can do, and you probably have already done so, if not, you want to actually press the chat with everyone button in the bottom left-hand corner to open the chat and participant list side panel. I'll give a few seconds to see if a few of you have clicked on that button and send out a quick hello. Haha, it's working. Okay. Thank you guys for helping me out with that. Now, of course, you can to get to the chat screen, you click on the group chat tab at the top of the side panel to switch from the participant's view to the chat view. And you should be able to type your message, the text box at the bottom of the side panel, and, of course, optionally pressing the left-facing arrow in the top left corner will hide the chat panel if you wish to make the presentation slides take up the full screen again. So I believe that's all I have for you, making sure. Any other slides here? Okay. Now, this part about ReadyTalk hiding the chat by default. We discussed that one already. Okay, so I thought I was done there. Just making sure, I think that somebody's testing me if I actually did a dry run. Without further ado, I will turn it over to Rob Taft.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Adele. And as Adele indicates, it is nasty outside today here on the East Coast, so winter's finally here. We appreciate you joining us today for this call. We have a lot of information to share with you. Very exciting stuff, good stuff to share. The first thing that I want to get into is a little bit about the reorganization of our component, the Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support. We, as part of a government-wide initiative, we have reorganized to consolidate divisions and components within SSA. So this is not a initiative that is unique to ORDES per se, but it's really something that SSA is actively engaged in currently. What has happened is previously I served as the Deputy Associate Commissioner overseeing employment support programs in ORDES. And under this new alignment, I'm transitioning out of that job and have become the Division Director. We have, obviously, this is consistent with the information we had sent to you previously in regards to the BLAST information, but I'm just sort of walking through this verbally with you now. So I am now the Office Director, and what that means is I'm now leading what used to be two divisions, which was the Office of Ticket Operations and Provider Support and the Office of Beneficiary Outreach and Employment Support. They've merged into one component, which we're now referring to as the Office of Employment Support. So both the vocational rehabilitation functionality and the employment network functionality is housed under the same division. So that means I have a lot of responsibility. I'm excited about this challenge. I have a great team that I'm working with moving forward. And just to give you a couple updates on that, Patrice McLean is my deputy director, but she will also manage one of our teams, which is essentially our policy and innovation team. Kara Kaplan will manage our contracts and ENS team, so she slides over to help us with the management of things such as the WIP and the PABS and our ticket program manager. And our ENS and so forth. Finally, Janelle Bratcher will manage the vocational rehabilitation payments team, and they handle payments issues and support and provide outreach and service to our vocational rehabilitation partners. So that's a brief update. Now, Susan Wilski will transition into the responsibilities that I had as the former Deputy Associate Commissioner. So she'll be essentially handling both sides of the organization under one umbrella now. So she'll handle the research and demonstration side from the perspective of Deputy Associate Commissioner, and now she'll handle the employment support side as well. And as you may know, Kate Bent remains our Associate Commissioner moving forward. So that's the updates on the reorganization. We look forward. We are engaged in many activities, hitting the ground running, where everybody is super engaged. As you may know, but just to remind you, Gary Rao has retired from SSA. We wish Gary the very best. Regina Bowden, who led the OTOPS team, as we used to refer to it, has moved into a senior advisor capacity, and she will now serve in a broader capacity, providing guidance and assistance on all things employment support related. So it's exciting to have her join us in that capacity as well. So without further ado, I'm going to transition and say hello to a couple of new organizations that have come into the program. I mentioned this to our associates at Maximus. If we could, on the quarterly calls, just acknowledge new employment support providers coming into the program. So I'm going to do that now. We do have three that have come in since our last call, and that's Career Source Suncoast in Florida, Core Enterprises in Montana, and the ARC of Greater Boone County, who is also doing business under Job Connection in Indiana. So welcome to you. We hope you're on the call. Glad to have you with us. So now I want to transition into a little bit of information that will, the first part of this interesting news to share, which is in regards to the EN training modules, which we're now going to make available to you for you to go in and identify classes and courses that would be available for you to participate in training and receive training through to it. Through our partners at Maximus Ticket Program Manager. we're going to make this new training calendar available online so that you can go in and identify courses and sign up for training. We encourage you to take advantage of this new functionality and this new feature, as you, many of you will have new staff come into your organization or could use maybe a refresher or an update on certain areas to help you more effectively conduct ticket program business. So we're going to make that available, and I believe that link is presented in the chat module, if I'm not mistaken.
There it is.
And so the link is there. Please click into that so that you can check it out and go in and identify for you or the staff on your teams the opportunities available for you to participate in training. And please maximize this resource. We want you to be as effective and successful in this program as possible. And this is one of the things that we're doing to help you and your organizations move forward. So please take advantage of that and use that as much as possible. I want to add a reminder about suitability to those organizations out there. We, as you know, continuously conduct site visits. We are actually in the process of planning our FY19 visits right now. We have been funded earlier than usual, to say the very least. The government passed the budget on time, and so that meant that we have the funding available to start planning and conducting these visits. So you'll see us earlier this year than you may have in the past. One thing that we find during the site visits is many times that we identify that there are staff working in a facility who may not have suitability, and a lot of questions arise around this, and this was the case in our last go-around. And it's helpful, I think, for us to just give some general guidance on the issue just as by means of reminder. So in some of your organizations, you are servicing individuals in a variety of capacities, and that servicing occurs before you may be aware that that individual is a beneficiary receiving Social Security disability benefits. It's okay for you to talk to them about your other services and supports that you provide in your organization to assist your clients. Once, however, the caveat there is once you identify that that individual is a Social Security beneficiary and you assign their ticket, so that's the key piece. Once you assign the ticket, that person needs to work with somebody who has suitability in your organization. So whether you want to direct that person to another staff person within your organization or perhaps somebody located remotely and that service can be provided by telephone, so that every single person in your organization doesn't necessarily need suitability, but you can sort of screen that person to somebody who does have suitability and is a ticket specialist in your organization, that's fine as well. But just understand that once you assign that ticket, the beneficiary that you're servicing through Ticket to Work needs to be working with somebody who has suitability. And that's a requirement government-wide. That's not a unique programmatic requirement. So we just wanted to remind you about that, and if you have questions, obviously reach out to us. You can email us any questions that you have about that and so forth, but we do have additional information we can share with you if you do have questions moving forward. So the next item, and I'm talking a lot today, so bear with me, but this next piece is a very important piece, and this is in regards to some research that we've conducted internally. And again, remember that we are an employment support organization that is also partnered with a research and demonstration branch as well. So we try to take advantage of this expertise that we have available to help us or help inform our employment support programs. And what you're going to hear coming up is some research that has been conducted by my colleagues in the research side to identify the benefits of WIPA services and benefits counseling provided through our WIPA program. So by means of introduction, I want to introduce to you Emery Russell, who's going to talk to us a little bit about that research and walk us through. Emily is a research analyst in our Office of Research and Demonstration within ORDES. And she's going to present information on research for employment outcomes, so earnings outcomes, employment outcomes for beneficiaries who received WIPA services. And the point to this is we're going to talk to you about a unique opportunity after Emily demonstrates the impact of receiving these services, which are pretty substantial in this research. We're going to talk to you about some new opportunities we're going to open up to your organizations to take advantage of some training that we are going to make available. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Emily to walk us through that research. So Emily, if you'd be kind enough to step in at this point.
Hi, everyone, and thanks, Rob, and thanks, everyone, for having me here. As Rob said, I'll be talking about some research we've done on employment outcomes for SSA beneficiaries who have received services from the Work Incentives Planning and Assistance Program. And so on this first slide here, I'm just going to go over a little bit of background on the WIPA program. So the WIPA program provides free work incentives information to SSDI and SSI disability beneficiaries. And there are community work incentive coordinators, or CWICs, at WIPA organizations who provide counseling about benefits and the effect of work on benefits, provide ongoing work incentives, monitoring, and assistance, and develop long-term work plans to guide the effective use of work incentives. And WIPA's focus on serving beneficiaries who are employed or seeking employment. And moving on to the next slide. So we analyzed employment outcomes by looking at two groups of SSDI and SSI disability beneficiaries who enrolled in WIPA services for the first time in 2009. We looked at beneficiaries who were looking for work at intake and who were employed at intake. And we compared these WIPA enrollees to 2009 SSA beneficiaries who did not receive WIPA services. And we looked at two groups there as well. We looked at all non-WIPA beneficiaries and all non-WIPA beneficiaries who had worked in 2009. And then we followed up and looked at employment outcomes through 2015 so that we had 6 years of follow-up data on these individuals. And on the next slide, I'm going to go into these findings in more detail in the next few slides, but just to give an overview of what we found. We found that outcomes are better for WIPA enrollees than for working beneficiaries who don't receive WIPA services. Many WIPA enrollees worked in the 6 years following enrollment, and many had their benefits suspended or terminated due to work, leading to benefits forgone for work for SSA. We found that outcomes for WIPA enrollees were better than those for beneficiaries who work without getting WIPA services. And even when we looked at outcomes for those who were looking for work at WIPA enrollment, they did better long-term than those who were already employed in 2009 but who did not get these WIPA services. And one thing that's important to keep in mind is that these aren't causal impacts, meaning we can't say for sure that WIPA services are what caused these better outcomes. It's possible that WIPA participants may have had better outcomes even without receiving WIPA services. But still, we see a clear positive relationship between these WIPA services and outcomes for beneficiaries. And moving on to the next slide. So these next three slides show a series of charts going into more detail on the outcomes I just mentioned, and they all follow the same format. So this top panel here looks at the non-WIPA beneficiaries, SSA beneficiaries who did not receive WIPA services, and we see those two groups. There were about 13.7 million beneficiaries who didn't receive WIPA services, and about 2.1 million of those non-WIPA beneficiaries were employed in 2009. And then the bottom panel shows the WIPA enrollees, and we see those two groups, those who were looking for work when they enrolled in WIPA services, which was about 8,000 people, and those who are employed, which is around 4,800 people. And these top blue bars show the percent who worked at some point during the follow-up period. So we see that almost a quarter of all non-WIPA beneficiaries worked at some point during that period. And by definition, all of the employed group, 100% of them worked during that period. And then among those who received WIPA services and were looking for work when they started receiving WIPA services, around 71% of them went on to work at some point by 2015. And then these bottom red bars were looking at the percent who had their benefits suspended or terminated for work. So among all non-WIPA beneficiaries, a very small percentage, less than 3%, went on to leave SSA benefits because of work. For those who were employed in 2009, almost 13% of them went on to leave benefits for work. And you see that WIPA enrollees did a little bit better in this regard. Among those who are looking for work, a little over 14% of them went on to leave benefits. And among those who were employed, close to 27% left benefits. And on the next slide, here we're looking at the average number of months that beneficiaries spent in benefits, suspense, or termination for work. So you can see that this follows a similar pattern as well. Among all non-WIPA beneficiaries, they spent on average less than 1 month in benefits, suspense, or termination for work. Those who were employed but did not receive WIPA services spent a little less than 3 months in average, 3 months on average in benefits, suspense, or termination for work. And WIPA enrollees, again, do better than non-WIPA beneficiaries. Those who were looking for work left the roles for a little over 3 months on average, and those who were employed were off of benefits for over 7 months. And on this last slide here, we're looking at average benefits forgone for work. So these are the benefits that these beneficiaries would have been receiving from SSA had they not left benefits because of their work activity. So this represents possible savings to SSA from these beneficiaries going back to work. And again, it follows the same pattern. So for all non-WIPA beneficiaries, it was an average of $900 per person. For employed non-WIPA beneficiaries, it was around $4,300 on average. And then for WIPA enrollees, again, it's a little bit better for those who were looking for work, around $4,500 per person, and then close to $10,000 per person for those who were employed and received WIPA services. So just to sum up again across these patterns that we've seen, WIPA enrollees tend to do better when we look at long-term earnings and employment outcomes than non-WIPA beneficiaries. Even those who were looking for work when they enroll in WIPA do a little bit better than those who are already employed but don't receive WIPA services, and those who are employed when they start receiving WIPA services end up doing a lot better than beneficiaries who don't receive these WIPA services. And again, we can't necessarily say that these better outcomes were caused by the WIPA services, but there's still some positive evidence that this benefits counseling and assistance is helping these beneficiaries go back to work and stay employed and leave the benefit roles. And I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone has.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Emily. This is quite a gem. It's like a diamond in the rough to find out this information. Shannon, what we'd like to do now is open up for some questions.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to signal for a question, please press star 1 at this time. Again, that is star 1 to signal for a question. And our first question will come from Bertha Street of Empower.
Yes. Hello, everyone. My question is about the beneficiaries and giving their information to maybe a CWIC. If the CWICs are not certified as far as the Ticket to Work program, as far as the suitability, can we give them information, or they need to be suitability for the Ticket to Work program and not the Benefits to Work program? I hope that's making sense.
So
I'm not sure the answer to that. Rob, do you know?
I'll take a stab at that. If you're talking about the CWIC that works in the WIPA organization, they should have suitability. So that should not be any issue whatsoever. If you were going to talk about an opportunity to have this training made available, it won't be CWIC training and certification, but it will be a variation of that. And Susan's going to talk about that in a minute. But if you're going to have somebody on your staff take that training and answer questions about in regards to benefits planning, then yes, they should have suitability. Does that help?
Okay. Yes, sir. It helps a lot. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you, Bertha.
Our next question will come from Gregory Stone of AmeriForce Personnel.
Hi, Gregory.
Hey, Mr. Stone, please press your mute function. And hearing no response, we have no further questions at this time.
Okay, we actually do have a few in the chat. You want to help us with that, John?
Absolutely. Our first question comes from Jackie Gast, who asks, will there be funding for additional benefits counseling, or WPA in Maryland is quite stretched?
So that's a good question, and really that gets to the heart of what we're trying to do here. The short-term answer is no. Our WPA funding is stagnant. We do not expect it to increase. But what we're proposing to do and what we're going to talk about next is expanding training opportunities for some of your staff to receive a version of WPA training that would be similar but not exactly the same as CWIC training. And I don't want to go too far into Susan's presentation, but that's the next piece coming, and that we think will help alleviate this stretch on the resources that we're seeing with the WPA projects.
Thank you, Rob. Any others, John?
Yes. Our next question comes from Alicia Turner, who asks, what is the difference between the CWIC training and the benefits training through Cornell?
That's a good question. I can't speak to the specifics among the two, but I can tell you that the training that we're going to offer is free. And my understanding is that there is a fee for the Cornell training. Now, if you want to pay for the Cornell training, that's and investigate that, we encourage you to do so. But the training that we're fortunate to be able to make available to you will not have a charge.
Okay. I think, is this a good time to segue?
I think so.
All right. Well, as we've mentioned, that we have more information coming. And Susan O'Mara has joined us from the Virginia Commonwealth University. And she's joined us to share information about VCU training and certification opportunities for employment networks. Susan is a faculty member in the Department of Special Education and Disability Policy in the VCU School of Education, and she currently serves as the director of VCU's Work Incentives Planning and Assistance National Training and Data Center, as well as the site director for the Promoting Opportunities Demonstration. So Susan also coordinates Work Incentives Counseling, Training, and Technical Assistance for Social Security Supported Employment Demonstration. So we're very happy and excited to hand this over to Susan.
Thank you, Adele, and hi, everyone. It's really great to join you this afternoon. We appreciate this opportunity to share some information about some of the training opportunities that are available to you through our WPA National Training and Data Center contract. And so if we could just start on slide two, I know that Emily did provide some background or context about the WPA program, and I'm going to try to go through these a little more quickly then, but I just wanted to make sure you all, everyone on the call is familiar with the WPA program since we're going to talk about that throughout. As I'm sure most of you are aware, the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance, or WPA program, was established as a component of the Ticket to Work and Work Incentive Improvement Act of 1999. It's a network of community-based programs that provide work incentive counseling services to beneficiaries, and they began providing services in 2000. We have 82 WPA projects located across the country, and they serve disability beneficiaries in all states and U.S. territories. And the work incentive counselors, as Emily pointed out, are delivered by community work incentive coordinators, or CWICs. We currently have about 400 CWICs employed by these 82 projects. So if we can move to slide three. So the WPA program, like the Ticket to Work program, is very much a key component of Social Security strategy to promote employment of disability beneficiaries and then help to reduce dependency on disability benefits. And so it was great to hear the findings of the study that was conducted. The purpose of WIPA is to provide individualized work incentive counseling to beneficiaries to help them in their return to work efforts, to help them be successful. And annually, the WIPA project serves about 35,000 beneficiaries. And again, as it was mentioned, services are prioritized for those who are ready to go to work, working on securing a position, or already working. If we could go to slide 4 at this time. The VCU National Training and Data Center, we've been involved in delivering the training and technical support to the WIPA project since the program began in 2000. And for the last 11 years, our team has been responsible for supporting the WIPAs across the whole country, all states and territories. And we also have a role in providing training, certification, and support to the Ticket to Work helpline related to their providing work incentive information to beneficiary callers and making referrals to the WIPA projects when it's appropriate. So initially, our contract focused solely on providing training, certification, and technical assistance for the WIPA CWICs. But over the years, recognizing the efforts of many ENs and state VR agencies and other organizations to develop work incentive counseling services, as well as this need that was referred to build WIP counseling services beyond the WIPA, build capacity, Social Security decided to later make the training and certification available to staff of community partner agencies. But the focus, again, was solely on training and certifying professionals whose job is to deliver intensive and individualized counseling services. In 2007, VCU began training and certifying and supporting the community partner work incentive counselors. So we've been doing that for a number of years at this point. And this would include counselors who are working for ENs as well as state VR agencies. More recently, in 2016, Social Security added a new alternative training option that we refer to as the introductory web course. And this is a training that is an alternative, and it's for professionals who may not be delivering work incentive counseling, but they're a part of the employment team for beneficiaries. And as such, they need to have a basic understanding of the benefit programs and work incentives. So we have these two very distinct options available now, which is very exciting for your agencies and your staff, as well as other community partner organizations. So if we could look at slide 5, we're going to start by looking at a bit of the detail on the CWIC, Community Partner Work Incentive Counseling Initial Training and Certification. It's a mouthful. But this is the intensive training and certification process. And I think that the most important thing to keep in mind is that it is very intensive. It's a year-long training and certification process. And it's this is required for all WIPA CWICs. They are not the CWICs are not permitted to begin providing services, direct services to beneficiaries until they have gone through this training and the first part of the certification process, and of course have to have suitability. So beyond this, the training is only available to community partner staff who perform CWIC-like work as a regular part of their jobs. So this would include your staff, ENs who might be working as work incentive counselors, or staff you might, positions you might want to create to do that. There are multiple components to the training and certification, and to be approved to participate in the training, an individual and their agency have to commit to completing all of the requirements. So it's kind of, you can't just participate in part of it. Once you start the process, you're required to go through the whole thing, the two-part certification. If we can move to slide 6. And this slide provides some information on the required components. The first two components include a pre-training call and required attendance for all 5 days of the initial training class. And so this is a classroom face-to-face training, and it's based on an extensive Social Security-approved national curriculum that covers not only the technical information on the disability programs and work incentives that a CWIC needs to know, but also the practical aspects of how to do the job of a CWIC, or a community partner work incentive counselor. And this curriculum is updated and reviewed every year, and we're in the process of doing that right now. Now, immediately following the initial training class, participants are required to complete a two-part certification process. The part one of the process takes place immediately upon the group returning from the initial training class. It starts at following Monday morning, and it consists of a series of online competency-based exams and assignments. And the entire part one process takes about 45 hours, and that's over a six-week period, okay? And throughout that process, the participants have access to technical assistance through our VCU team. Part two of the process, once a person successfully completes part one, they go on to part two. And this actually tests the ability of the participants to take the information and skills they've learned and apply them in working with the actual beneficiaries. So over a 12-month period, participants will submit a benefit summary and analysis report that they develop for three different disability beneficiaries. So as you see, the training is really designed for people who are going to be doing the job of a CWIC or a community partner work incentive counselor, including agency from your staff who might be directly providing that service on a regular basis. If we can move to slide seven. Okay, and here we have some, I wanted to note that we do have detailed information on the initial training and certification process on our website. What you're getting today is a very quick overview of this. So I've provided some links here, and you'll be able to see a calendar of our training classes as well as information on the registration period and process. We do hold the trainings in different locations across the country so that people don't have to travel so far all the time. We move them around. The calendar of the classes on our website does indicate the location for each of the classes, so you can look and see what's closest and make most sense for your team. And as Rob mentioned, there is no cost to participate in this training class and certification process, but we do want to make sure you're aware that your agency would be responsible for covering the travel and lodging and meal expenses for your staff who would attend. Currently, registration is open for our initial training class beginning on January 28th in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that might sound really good to some of you all who are in the Northeast right now. So go ahead and check that out if you have staff who are interested. So if we could move to slide eight. So in terms of access to the initial training and certification, beginning with this current contract year, it's really important. I wanted you to know that Social Security is very invested in this and has increased the number of initial training classes that we'll be offering. We'll be conducting over the course of this contract year a total of 12 classes, and our current calendar basically includes one training class per month. In addition to offering more classes, Social Security has also placed a greater emphasis on including community partners in the training classes. So with a larger number of available spaces and priority for their partners, including EN staff. So that's great news as well. Slide nine, this provides information on Social Security's registration priorities, or in other words, the order in which registrants are approved for a space in the training. WIPA project staff will always have the highest priority, and then this is followed by community partner staff who provide direct counseling services. And you can see here, I'm not going to go through all of this, but you can see within the community partner group, priority one includes staff or managers of organizations or agencies who are an EN, state VR agency, Medicaid agency, or American Job Center. So you come above all other community partner agencies that might have staff registering. With the increased number of sessions and participants in the classes this year, we're in a much better position to be able to accommodate staff from your agencies who do register. Some of you I know might have had trouble in the past getting in because we had a smaller number of classes available, but this should really help this year, and we're hoping that you do take us up on that and have people register for the training. On slide 10, I've just included a couple of pointers here on the registration process, with the most important being to register early and make sure that your staff are registering as an EN staff on the registration page. You'll have a place where they'll ask for your status. And this helps us to do the priorities, set up the priorities for Social Security. Once we are able to accommodate 30 participants in a class, but we do on average have about 75 registrants for each class. And what happens is once we close registration, we prepare a list of registrants by priority. We send this to our contract officer at Social Security, and they review that and make the final decisions about who will be provided a slot at in the next training. And finally, as I said, I think I said earlier, in terms of the cost, no cost to participate in the training, but you are responsible for travel expenses. So if we look at slide 11, there are a couple of points, important points about the community partner certification. Now, just one thing I want to point out is that the training itself, the five-day training and certification process that community partners will go through is exactly the same as what the WIPA staff take. So we're not operating separate classes for the WIPA and for the community partners. So if you have staff going, they will very likely be in a class with WIPA projects there as well. So the difference being, once they're certified, they're not certified as CWICs, because that's a terminology that's strictly for the WIPA program, but they're certified as community partner work incentive counselors. Okay. So our curriculum actually is for CWICs and community partner work incentive counselors. First, EN staff who complete, I'm sorry, I already did that bullet there. Okay, the second bullet is really important. And this is one of the key differences between our training program, training and certification program, and other training programs, such as the one referenced earlier. Once your staff are certified as a community partner work incentive counselor, they will have access to ongoing training and technical assistance from a designated VCU technical assistance liaison for as long as they maintain their certification. So they will actually be able to access all of the training programs that we conduct for WIPA, CWICs, and community partners, certified community partners, and participate in technical assistance calls and activities as well. So that's really important to note that. That's I know it's really hard to make sure that go through a certification program, that people have the follow-up assistance they need when they start to implement services. And finally, Social Security. I just wanted to point out here that Social Security did institute a continuing certification requirement for WIPAs and community partners as well, beginning in July 2016. And each year following initial certification, community partner work incentive counselors have to complete 18 credits of VCU supplemental trainings to maintain their certification status. Okay, if we could get to the next slide, we're going to switch gears here and talk about the new introductory web course that we're very excited about. And the full title for this course is Social Security Disability Benefits, Work Incentives, and Employment Support Programs. So we like to refer to it as the introductory web course. And I think after several years of including community partners in the initial training and certification process, it became really clear to us and to Social Security that we had a number of people attending the training, a number of community partners going to the training because they needed information on the disability programs and work incentives. But once they were in the training, they were a bit overwhelmed by both the amount and the depth of the content we were covering. Many of these individuals were not working as work incentive counselors and didn't necessarily have the need or want certification, but attended the training at the time because it was the only option that was available to them. To address this, the introductory web course was developed. And this is a two-week online course, and it provides basic information on the Social Security Disability Benefit Programs, as well as work incentives for each of those programs, and an introduction and overview of the work incentive planning and assistance projects and what those counseling services look like. On slide 13, in terms of the target audience, for this course, among other groups, community partners who are engaged in return to work services with beneficiaries as well as other disability professionals who work with beneficiaries, are in a position to encourage work and financial stability. So, you know, the target audience for this includes a number of different groups, but in particular these two groups. And this would definitely apply to EN staff. It actually was developed with EN staff in mind, and we're hoping it's something that you'll consider for all of your staff. On slide 14, so it's a, as I mentioned, it's a two-week course. It contains six different lessons, each with a one-hour video lecture and supplemental readings and resources. We do have a VCU instructor that monitors the course and provides support. And while the course is largely self-directed and paced, there is a discussion board, so the participants can use that to post questions or share information. The different lessons include lesson one just starts with a basic foundation for understanding the problem of unemployment and poverty for disability beneficiaries, and also an introduction to the WIPA program. Then lesson two and three go on to talk about the Social Security Disability Program and its work incentives. And then if you could go on to slide 15, lessons four and five address SSI program and work. And then finally, lesson six focuses on how to work collaboratively and provide the same positive messages about work and benefits to beneficiaries and trying to help them to take that next step towards employment. On slide 16, the introductory web course is a Social Security approved course, and we're currently offering it eight times a year. I did share a link here to the calendar on our website. Registration is currently open right now through next Tuesday for the next class that begins on December 3rd. We actually kept it open a little bit longer because we weren't going to do this call. We wanted to make sure you had the opportunity, if you're a staff, to sign up for it. So we hope that you do, and you encourage other team members in your organization. Finally, on slide 17, I wanted to share some figures with you from last year. If you look at the percentages on the slide here, you can see the EN staff accounted for just 12% of participants in the introductory web course last year. And we are hoping to significantly increase participation this year. So we do hope that you'll register and participate, and also share this information and encourage others on your team to register and participate as well. I did include my contact information. If you have any questions at all regarding the two training programs or anything else about what we do as the WIPA National Training and Data Center, I encourage you to call. We're always happy to talk with you. And so you have our contact information there. So, Adele, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you very much. Rob, I think you wanted to mention a few things before we open up the line.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Susan, very much for that excellent presentation. So the two points that we're trying to drive here are, one, the enormous benefits that we see as outcomes that are associated in the provision of these services to beneficiaries. Emily talked a bit about that in the earnings outcomes and the substantial increase in earnings outcomes that we can associate to individuals receiving these services, not necessarily causal per se, but certainly associated. And the second piece is this enormous opportunity that we've been presented with, working in conjunction with VCU to provide this training, greatly expand the capacity for your organizations to send staff for either the certification piece under the community partner certification that Susan talked about, and I strongly encourage you to consider and take advantage of this opportunity, as well as the training online, both of these. And in some of your organizations, you may have, for the larger organizations, multiple staff, you may want one person to go and be the certified community provider, work incentives counselor, and then the rest of your team could theoretically take the online training, and you'd have the one go-to person with the expertise, but everybody, more savvy in the general concepts of work incentives. This program, the importance of this is pretty fundamental. This program is based on and is built on top of work incentives. And your clients are going to want to know, the first thing they're going to ask, or ask early on at least, is how are earnings going to impact my benefits? Or how is this promotion going to impact my benefits? The other issue that we have to be aware of programmatically is that in many areas, the minimum wage standards are changing constantly. So when a person worked a part-time job previously and never got the trial work level, now in a different scenario, in a different area, that if minimum wage goes to $15 an hour, they very well could hit that threshold. You need to know, and you need to help your beneficiary navigate these issues. This is arguably one of the most important and valuable services you can provide to your client. And so our hope and our goal is that you maximize this opportunity. Now, for those of you who have taken a different training through a different entity, that's completely fine. We are just emphasizing the increase in availability of these services to the beneficiaries participating in the program across the board. So that's what we're encouraging. We're not advocating one versus another or anything of that sort. We just want as many of your organizations to have this expertise as possible, and now is the time to take advantage of these opportunities. So that's my spiel on that.
Thank you, Rob. Again, thanks a lot, Emily, and thank you so much to Susan. We'll open up the line, Shannon, for a few questions.
Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to signal for a question, please press star 1 at this time. Again, that is star 1 for questions. And we do have a question from Gregory Stone of AmeriForce Personnel.
Yes, good afternoon. I had a little technical problem earlier with my phone. Can you hear me at this time?
Yes, Gregory, we hear you. Thank you.
Okay, very well. Okay. My question is this. Amongst WIPA contract holders across the nation, is there a particular methodology by which a particular CWIC or WIPA staff, rather, would do referrals out to employment providers such as ENs, BRs, et cetera?
I can certainly take that, unless I know Marjorie's on the line if you wanted to talk.
Go for it, Susan. I can jump in.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Yes, that's an excellent question. And we have comprehensive training, and a big component of that is training the WIPA staff and the community partners about their role on the employment support team and how critical that is, linking them with VR, ENs, community organizations that provide supports that can help them be successful. And we provide training on the ticket program during the initial training process. That's part of the training and certification. And we also discuss it in terms of outreach, encouraging them to be aware of all the ENs and the services they provide, and make sure that they help the beneficiaries they're working be aware of those and make referrals to them, and help the beneficiary make a choice around that. So we certainly do that. We see that as a huge role for the WIPA CWICs and the partners who are going through this training and working as work incentive counselors. I'm hoping that answers your question.
Well,
and
actually,
this is Marjorie.
It does go to your
question. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to add one more thing. This is Marjorie McKeever, and I just wanted to add that also I would encourage any ENs, although like Susan said, we train the WIPAs, we try to encourage them to, learn all about ticket and refer folks to their ticket providers in the area or national ENs. But we also, I would encourage you to reach out to any WIPAs in your servicing area. Introduce yourself. Find out what the best process is to, you know, that you can work together and that how they like referrals to come in when they're coming from you to them. So always good to reach out and connect. That's all. Just wanted to add that little piece.
Very well. I asked this question based on this statement. I've been involved with the Tick to Work program since 2008. I have, you know, handled the largest employment network in my particular state. I have then started my own employment network. And since 2008 to this day in my state, I have never, period, received a referral from our state's WIPA program, even though I have reached out to them. And I just wondered, you know, what's up with that? And whether there are any, like, internal controls that are in place to make certain that there is a equitable referral process. I know that's a hard question. It, you know, it's a hard statement as well.
Thanks for your statement. We just encourage you to reach out to the local WIPA in your area to try to establish contact. We don't, programmatically, SSA does not facilitate that directly, so we leave it to the service providers to navigate those issues. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And it does appear we have no further questions at this time.
Thanks for that, Shannon. John, do we have a few that we want to pick from the chat?
Yeah, I'm going to pick a few that are just related directly to the VCU in particular. The first question comes from Jackie Gast, who asks, did I hear all TWICs must have passed suitability?
Yes, to begin providing services to beneficiaries, they have to have suitability. That's one of the things we work with. We track closely with Social Security before they begin providing service.
All right. And our next question comes from Kim Barrett, who asks, so I might have missed this, but what is the difference between a CWIC and a CPWIC?
Okay. CWIC is the term that's used strictly for staff of the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Projects. And Social Security asks that we designate that solely for those WIPA projects. So we, the title for community partners who go through the training and certification process is Community Partner Work Incentive Counselor. It is the same training and certification process. When we get to the continuing certification, there are some different requirements at that point for WIPAs and community partners, but that initial training and certification is the same.
Thank you,
Susan. And our next question comes.
I was just checking to see how we were looking, John.
We have a couple more questions related to VCU. So our next question is from Virginia, who asks, is there a cost to the online course?
Oh, that's a really good question, and I failed to talk about that. Sorry. No, there is no cost, no cost at all. And at this point, everybody who is registering is being approved to participate. So it's not like you have to register and, you know, wait. Well, you know, everyone has been confirmed that is registered for the training.
All right. And it looks like we have three more questions. The next one comes from Jackie Gast, who asks, when you talked about the training in Charlotte, was that the CPWIC training?
Yes, that's the – well, it's the same. It's one and the same. We call our training CWIC, WIPA CWIC, and Community Partner Work Incentive Counseling Initial Training Sessions. So they actually go to the same class that the WIPA CWICs go to. and they're trained on the same model for service delivery. So essentially what Social Security did was initially it was only available to WIPAs, and they opened up the training for partners to also participate.
All right. And our next question comes from Ann Austin, who asks, and I believe this is in reference to the online course, can they add another module for federal, state, or other benefits?
Federal, state, or other benefits? I mean, we this is strictly addressing the Social Security disability benefit programs and work incentives. I mean, there's certainly always an option to look at adding other things. Getting into this, I mean, the state benefits, that goes beyond typically what we would cover in this session, because of course every state has great variation in benefits. But we can certainly consider that. If you want to send a suggestion with a little more detail, that'd be great.
All right. And our final question comes from Armina, who asks, will the introductory training lectures be available at any time, or do you need to be in front of the computer at a designated time?
Oh, no, they're self-paced. So, you know, as long as you have access to the internet, you can log in. We do, you know, we'll set up a class for a certain 2-week period, and it'll be available during that entire period. So you can go at your own pace and at any time.
All right. And it looks like we did have just one more question pop in, and it was, where would you go to register for the online training?
It's on our VCU website. I put a link in the PowerPoint there, but our website is www.vcu-ntdc.org, and that's for, you know, National Training and Data Center.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thanks for helping out in the chat, John. And, again, thank you to Emily, and thank you for Susan for the information. We'll go on to the agenda, and I can hand this on over to Kara Kaplan.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just have a couple of announcements to make. We are having a national call with the ENs this coming Tuesday, the 20th, about phase one milestones and the requirements surrounding them with the costs and the relationships. It will be a one-hour Q&A session, so please prepare any questions that you may have surrounding this topic in advance. That would be very helpful to make the call run smoother. Additionally, our office, as Rob mentioned, has reorganized. So we have some new staff working in EN service, and we had to reshuffle some of the state assignments. And those changes are currently on the website, and the link should be in the chat line for you guys to see. Also, as most of you know, we've changed the process for overpayment recovery. This process has been in effect since November 1st, so just to reiterate, we're no longer accepting checks from ENs, and we will recoup overpaid funds from any payments due, not just from the SSN you were overpaid on. And then I wanted to go over, which is in your TPA, some of our minimum performance requirements for ENs. So, according to Part 3, Section 9 of your TPA, and specifically 9A, it states that at a minimum, all ENs are required to take at least one ticket assignment within the first calendar year of your TPA award and maintain at least 3 active ticket assignments during each calendar year thereafter. In addition, you must receive at least one ticket payment during the second year following TPA award, and 3 payments during each calendar year thereafter. And we, for those ENs that are older and aren't a year or two old, we were allowing you to have at least 1 year till after you signed the new TPA, which was September 1st at the latest of 2017 for every EN. So our EN service team is doing some oversight activities, and recently we've reached out to several ENs who have no tickets assigned, and as a result of that, some ENs were terminated. The rest have received cure notices. Those who receive cure notices will need to either comply and go through mandatory training or terminate their agreement with the ticket program. We're taking adherence to the TPA seriously, and we will continue these oversight activities. If you have any questions at all about your TPA requirements, please contact enservice@ssa.gov. And that is all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. And we'll move on to Anna Morales.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm just going to touch briefly on the EN Foundation's training. Thank you, Rob. You actually did a great job during your introduction talking about the modules itself. We have 16 modules available for training that it ranges from welcoming new ENs into the program to suitability, my SSA account, and we move into details of the ticket portal itself, TPR, how to prepare an individual work plan, those services and supports reviews, and so forth. So we have those modules available. We provide that for key individuals at each employment network. New staff, but also all the new ENs go through that training. It is mandatory per the TPA. We offer individual sessions, but we also offer group sessions. And that is the calendar that we were referring to. Now is posted in the website. And we offer the first phase of the trainings on an individualized basis, but we offer phase 2, 3, and 4, which is the curriculum that we have available as a group training as well. So you can check it out. We are posting that every month, so you can check your schedule in advance. And if you would like to join one of the sessions, please email enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov, and we will enroll you. And that's all I have. Back to Adele.
Thank you, Anna.
She's working.
Okay. We did notice there's a few questions regarding wage reporting in the chat. I'd like to remind you that there is some valuable information at Choose Work regarding wage reporting, and we'll look that up and we'll go ahead and we'll put that in the chat for you. But what we'll go ahead and do right now is we'll open up the line for questions. Shannon, if you can help us out with that.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, again, that is star one if you'd like to ask a question. And we have no phone questions at this time.
Thank you so much. John, is there anything in the chat that we want to bring up?
Yeah, we have a few questions. So our first question comes from early in the call, and it was Linda Oxford who asks, is there an org chart available? And that was in reference to the changes at Social Security.
Yes, there is. Let me check with my management and see if we can get that posted someplace where you can go ahead and connect to that. We can make it something that would be accessible, I don't know, maybe on the Choose Work website or otherwise available so that you can get into it and open up and understand who's reporting where and so forth. So, yes, I will look into that and we will get back to you.
Right. And our next question comes from Armina, who asks, we have a WIPA program at our agency. From what I understand, they can't automatically refer clients to me, but it is okay for me to refer clients to them. Is this correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And then our next question is also about WIPA. It comes from Jackie Gast, who asks, how are WIPA programs currently funded?
WIPA programs are funded through a grant that we received through congressional appropriation. That money has stayed the same
going back at least to 2006. So if understanding that the funding has been leveled, that there have been increases in costs and so forth associated. And as we have recompeted the grants, and the last time we did this was 2015, we saw a decrease in the number of projects. So that means that we had to change the business model to provide more remote services, you know, by telephone and Skype and using other technology. We anticipate, based on the on what we've seen in terms of trends, that this will continue. And so this opportunity to expand the provision of benefits counseling through employment networks and vocational rehabilitation agencies is something that we identify programmatically as a priority.
Okay. And our next question comes from John Yent, who asks, is Social Security advertising Ticket to Work or WIPA the services directly to beneficiaries? I have not seen any promotions in my area in New Orleans.
We currently conduct automated outreach calls to at least 20,000 beneficiaries on a monthly basis. That's our primary point of marketing, as well as we send mailers, we send letters, what we refer to as the good news letter, to beneficiaries at the basically new beneficiaries coming into the program and those celebrating their 1 and 3 year anniversary dates. That total is about 75,000 letters that are going out a month, and it directs the beneficiaries to the Choose Work website, where they can go in and request work, or they can either call and talk to the call center, our live call center, and receive a list of ENs, or they can go in and do a search through our search engine for ENs that provide services that they're seeking. The importance there is that if beneficiaries are going into the call center or going into the Choose Work website and getting contact information from the website, that you need to make sure that you are responding to calls coming into your organization in a timely manner and getting back to folks. So those are our two primary methods to conduct outreach and inform beneficiaries of their eligibility to participate in the program.
All right. And our next question comes from Deborah Reardon, who asks, can someone clarify if SSDI beneficiaries are able to report wages directly through their My Account on Social Security?
I will be the first to admit that I am not well-versed in wage reporting processes that are currently available programmatically, but I will refer you to the Choose Work website. We have an entire dedicated page that discusses the options concerning wage reporting. So if you go to choosework.gov and go to the search area and type in wage reporting, you should be able to access that information.
And we've also posted that link in the chat as well.
Great. Thank you.
Absolutely. And our next question comes from Stacey Clark, who asks, is an EN allowed to get referrals from the CWIC person that works in the WIPA department at the same company?
Marjorie, do you want to address?
Hi, Rob. Thanks. This is Marjorie. If the CWIC is not working for the EN, I assume you're talking about a parent company that has both an EN and a WIPA under the same umbrella. We have very strict firewall requirements about that, so that when WIPAs are referring folks to ENs, we do want them to not just refer to the EN in their organization, but make sure that they're making the beneficiary understand that there are lots of ENs out there and how important it is to choose the one that would be best for them and what they need. If they give them a list of ENs and that other EN happens to be on the list and the person contacts them, that's fine, but they shouldn't be making direct referrals, if that answers your question.
All right. Our next question comes from Heather Miller, who asks, when sending in documents to start the suitability process for new staff members, can we use our GSO account to send the documents securely? If so, the addresses I have to send the info to come up as invalid when I try to send it.
I would suggest sending that question in to ENS via email for a response.
Mm-hmm. And we've put that email up in the chat there. All right. Our next question comes from Judy Sanderson, who asks, does a new staff person have to have past suitability in order to participate in the EN Foundation's modules?
I believe that's in reference to the online training offered by VCU, if I'm not mistaken. Or is that the training by TPM?
This is our Service Foundation module. So it depends on what phase they're on. And, of course, Anna would be the better one to speak to that.
I'm sorry, John. Can you repeat the question?
Absolutely. Does a new staff person have to have past suitability in order to participate in the Service Provider Foundation's modules?
Yes, like Adele said, it all depends on which topic we are talking about. The curriculum is tied to suitability, definitely. If somebody is, for example, working with a ticket holder developing IWPs, they need to have suitability in order to do that. So we have that as part of the phase three of the curriculum, and we usually wait for that person to be suitable and have ticket portal access to move ahead with the training. So it all depends the role of that individual, the function, and where they are. But for more information about the requirements of the training, we have that posted in the website as well.
Absolutely. And I'm going to be posting that link there. And I believe that link will specify which modules you'll need suitability for. I think it's everything after phase two. All right. And our final question in the chat comes from Joanne, who asks, how can we get current contact information on a beneficiary if we have old information and SSA has their current information?
So what we would have available would be in the portal, the ticket portal. And if that ticket is assigned to the EN, then the EN should have access to whatever information we have that's available in the portal. If the ticket is not assigned to the EN any longer, then we would not be able to share that information, from my understanding.
All right, and that's all the questions we have in the chat so far.
Okay, Shannon, just wants to make sure, do we have any in the queue?
Yes, ma'am, we do have a question, and as a reminder, that is star one if you'd like to ask a question. And our question will come from Armina Hakobayan of Vertigo Job Center.
Hi. Actually, I was waiting for an opportunity. I almost, I think I've even forgotten my question. I'm going to have to, if you don't mind, the question escaped my mind, actually. I will get back to you guys later. I'm so sorry.
No worries, Armina. Okay. It happens to the best of us.
Thanks for joining us.
And we do have two other questions. Our next question will come from Angela Sampson of Work Study Works.
Yes, I was just curious as to when this will be available for us, the PowerPoint, the presentation.
You want to give that about 7 to 10 business days. We should be able to have that available for you.
Adele, actually, the presentation is available online currently.
See,
if you
they
go
work
to
so
your
fast.
If you go to yourtickettowork.ssa.gov and click training and events, and then click events, you should be able to download the EN all-call presentation, the VCU presentation, as well as two supplementary VCU handouts. And I will also be posting that link in the chat.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
And our next question will come from Gregory Stone.
Yes, good afternoon. My question again is in, well, it follows a question that was recently asked. In trying to comply with CPA requirements, in when we as an employment network lose contact with a beneficiary, when we were to go to the portal, that information that, you know, sits in the portal that we're privy to see would not give us their, you know, physical address, whereabouts, et cetera. And BPQYs, based on 3288, expire. And so I guess the question is there a methodology, is there a way for an employment network to seek out address information, contact information, for beneficiaries that we have lost? Is there anything that works on that?
Good afternoon. This is Patrice McLean. This discussion has come up quite a few times, and while we're working with other areas within Social Security to find a way around it, at this time we are not able to share updated beneficiary information with ENs. Our hope is that if you have an established relationship with that ticket holder, that hopefully you'll have the information. But I can assure you that a lot of times when you don't have it, SSA doesn't have it either. And we end up having to take measures such as suspending the benefit payments of that individual so that we can force them into the field office. And I hate to say force, but so that they will come into the field office so that we can get their updated information. So a lot of times I can assure you we don't even have it. As of this time, we haven't been released to share updated information. I understand the position that puts employment networks in, but until we are released to share that information, we won't be able to share new information when we receive it. The portal, and if I can just add one more thing, the portal does feed off of our internal systems. So when SSA does have an updated address, I believe that is updated in the portal. But when we receive information, we're unable to move forward to share that information, that PII, with Employment Networks at this time. But we do understand the difficulties that might create, and are looking to see what we can do about it.
Okay. All right, yes, because as an EN, we are kind of moving towards the practice of systematically having our clients re-sign 3288 so that, you know, they never expire. And, you know, that's kind of going a little too far. But, you know, any progress is good progress.
So we understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we do have a follow-up question from Armenia.
Yes, thank you very much for allowing me to come on the line again. I do remember my question. And it was regarding the letters that go out to beneficiaries to let them know about EN services. I just wanted to share what my experience is with those letters. I've actually had clients, I just so happened they came on the same day, where they came in with the letter that says, congratulations, now you are qualified to get EN's ticket to work services. They were under the assumption and they're coming to me where I will be assigning them a job. Like a job ready to go from that letter. And then the more I was trying to explain, this is services, job search services, or they were saying, no, look at the letter. The letter says you get to assign me to a job and I need a job now. So it was a bit of an issue trying to explain. And it sounded like I was telling that it was me versus Social Security, what I was saying and what Social Security was saying. I was just wondering if there was another way to word that letter so it doesn't give that impression to ticket holders, especially those who have disabilities, that it's hard for them to understand difficult things, complex things.
Thank you for that. This is a challenge programmatically. It's a complex program that oftentimes the rules and the other aspects are misconstrued or what have you. we'll take your feedback and review the letters. I can tell you that changing the language in the letters is a amazingly enormous task for us to change the language, as it requires reprogramming and going through systems to change the language that goes to printing and so forth. It was a huge effort for us programmatically, going back about 3 or 4 years ago, to restart the letters. The letters had stopped going out to beneficiaries back in 2010, around that time, and we were successful in getting them restarted. We think that it's having a positive impact, but I do understand from time to time that there may be scenarios where beneficiaries are uncertain or unclear what the language in the letter reads, but we will take a look at the language in the letter. I do, while we're talking about notices, I want to reiterate, we're coming down to the end of the call, but I want to put everybody on notice that we are going to start mailing out COLA notices to everybody who receives a Social Security check in the U.S., whether it's retirement or disability. And in that COLA language, we refer beneficiaries to the Ticket to Work program. We have changed that language about 2 years ago. We strengthened the language. We added the 800 number and the website information into the notice, and this has had a huge impact in the number of calls that we get this time of year into the call center for questions that the individuals are having. So if you can, by means of comparison, I mentioned we sent about 70,000 plus or minus notices to new beneficiaries a month. When we talk about COLA, we're talking about several million letters going out between November, December, and January to individuals who receive payments from Social Security. And so we have seen our data and call volume skyrocket over the last 2 years. So I would say to you, as ENs, be on the lookout for an increase in call volumes to your organizations and be ready to handle those calls. Hopefully, all of you will get more inquiries. That's all I had.
Thanks for that, Rob. Shannon? I know that we've reached the past our call time. Just want to make sure if there's any others in the queue.
And we do have two questions remaining. We'll move on to Hawk Vu of Work Incorporated.
Yes, hi. My question is, how long should suitability approval take? Our office manager, her paperwork was submitted. It's been over 3 months, and we've been doing following up. She still hasn't received approval, and she, because of her work history in the past, she has had background checks before, and there hasn't been a problem in the past. I'm not sure why it's taking so long this time, but I wanted to see if I can get some feedback on that.
Thank you for that. Suitability, if you can imagine all of the entities, so aside from Ticket to Work program, when you're talking about obtaining suitability, that's staff that we have working, coming into the program, whether it's DDS staff, handling disability claims, or new employees coming into SSA to work in a field office. It's a massive, massive, massive workload. Our program is big, but it is one piece of a gigantic pie of work that comes into the agency. So we do hit snags from time to time in organizations having delays in suitability. What I ask is please send your concerns to our Employment Network Services mailbox with any specific information regarding the staff you're waiting on, and we will reach out to the personnel area in SSA that handles this for us. We do have designated contacts, and we will check and try to get that moving for you. But it's a continuous work in progress.
Can we get can we get the phone number and or email address for that?
Sure. If you could put the folks at TPM could put the EN services mailbox information into the chat, that would be great. I think we did that earlier.
And just one additional question. If the suitability is taking longer to get approved, can there be a lower level of suitability be done to where like our office staff can do billing and invoicing and things like that without working directly with the client?
Unfortunately, no.
Make it go faster? Okay.
Right. I mean, this is where I think organizationally you have to think about how you can delineate your, you know, the folks who are working with your ticket program clients and your other clients that may be non-ticket related, and sort of set up systems within your organization to route your ticket clients to the individuals with suitability in your organization. But that being said, whenever you're talking about accessing personal information, there are very, very strict rules surrounding that, and those are government-wide. And we have all heard about breaches in the media with personal identifying information being released or broken into. And so across government, this is a high-profile issue, and we are essentially, you know, implementing the rules that we are told to enforce.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that, Rob. I know we want to be respectful to everyone's time. We'll take that last call from the phone, Shannon, and then we'll have to wrap it up.
And there are no further questions at this time.
Oh. Well, there you go. Rob, over to you.
That's all I have. I hope everybody has a tremendous Thanksgiving holiday next week. Safe travels in the adverse weather if you're on the East Coast. And we look forward to speaking to you. We will have our next call in
February
2019. So we encourage you to use the information provided today to make your organization stronger and better and provide better services to the beneficiaries. Thank you all so much for your participation.